Welcome to another deep dive, everybody. Today, we are diving into the world of fisheries and pinnipeds.
Ooh, seals and fishing. I like it.
I know, right? It's going to be awesome. And we've got a great stack of sources for this one. Scientific reports.
Though always good.
Yeah. And we've even got some lectures and evolutionary biology texts.
Cool.
Yeah. So we're going to try to put all this together and really get a feel for the fascinating world of fish and fisheries.
All right. It's a bit...
And their connection to these charismatic pinnipeds, seals, sea lions, and walruses.
All right. Well, let's start with the fish. Most people probably don't realize how much goes into getting that fish on their plate.
Oh, yeah. They probably just think of like going to the store or something.
Right. But there's so much more to it than that. A fishery isn't just about the fish themselves. It's like this whole system.
A system.
Yeah. A complex web of interactions, you could say, with human and biological components. You've got everything from, you know, small-scale local fishing communities.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
To these huge commercial operations, all trying to harvest fish. Then you've got the scientists studying the fish populations, also known as fish stocks.
Fish stocks.
Yeah. These stocks, they're basically the unit that we use to manage a fishery.
So, like, is that like a certain number of fish or what?
It's a bit more complicated than that, but yeah, it's like a population of fish that we're trying to manage. And usually a stock is defined by location.
Okay, so like Atlantic cod off the coast of wherever, that would be like one stock.
Exactly. So it's super important to manage these stocks because, you know, we want to make sure there are enough fish for now and for the future.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we've got all these people involved in all this science, so I guess that means our fisheries are doing okay then? Like, well, are they healthy?
That's a great question, but it's definitely not a simple answer, unfortunately.
While
we've made some good progress, you know, there are still big challenges like overfishing.
Overfishing, yeah, that's a big one.
Right. And one thing that has really helped is the establishment of what are called exclusive economic zones, or EZs.
EZs.
Yeah, these basically give countries control over the fishing that happens within 200 miles of their coasts.
Okay, so like if a valuable tuna population is migrating through a certain area,
right,
without EZs, like anybody could just come and fish them all up.
Exactly. Yeah. But with an EZ in place, the country that controls that area, they can like set limits on how much tuna can be caught.
Yeah, so that would really help to prevent what they call the tragedy of the commons, right?
Yeah.
Where everybody tries to grab as much as they can before it's gone.
Exactly. But even with these regulations in place, things can still get pretty complicated.
I bet.
And some fisheries have experienced this boom and bust cycle.
Boom and bust?
Yeah, you know, they'll have this period of huge e-catches.
Oh, wow.
And then a rapid decline. And this can be caused by a bunch of different factors.
Are there any, like, famous examples of that happening?
Oh, yeah, for sure. One of the most well-known examples is the collapse of the northern cod fishery. Overfishing led to a drastic drop in the cod population.
Oh, wow.
And then they had to put a moratorium on fishing.
Like nobody could fish there anymore.
Pretty much. And it really devastated coastal communities that relied on that industry.
Wow. So this boom and bust cycle, it's not just some theoretical thing. It's really happened.
Yeah. And even closer to home, here, we've seen something similar with the Galapagos sea cucumber fishery.
Sea cucumbers. Those things are like a delicacy or something.
Yeah. In some places, anyway, just a few years after the fishery opened up, the sea cucumber population just plummeted.
It's like a classic example of you think there's so much, but then it just crashes.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that we can't take these resources for granted.
Absolutely. So we've been talking about all this recent stuff, but the human-fish connection actually goes back way further than most people realize.
Oh, yeah. It's a long history for sure.
I'm talking tens of thousands of years.
Yeah. Evidence shows that early humans were using harpoons to catch catfish like 90,000 years ago.
90,000 years. Harpoons. I was picturing like grabbing fish out of tide pools or something.
Uh-huh. It was definitely a bit more sophisticated than that.
Wow, that's pretty high tech for 90,000 years ago.
Yeah. And of course, fishing techniques continue to evolve from there.
Oh, I bet.
You know, ancient civilizations like the Egyptians, they used nets and spears.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The Greeks even developed storage ponds and fish farms.
Really? Like farming fish thousands of years ago. That's incredible.
It really is when you think about it. And you know all those techniques like drying and salting fish?
No, yeah, to preserve them.
That allowed people to like fish further from home and ship fish over longer distances.
Ah, so that helped contribute to trade and economic growth even back then.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Fish have always been a surprisingly important part of the economy.
Huh. I never thought of it like that. Are there any, like, famous historical examples of that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Let's talk about the Atlantic cod. By the 1500s, the cod fishery off Newfoundland was booming. You had fleets from France, Portugal, England,
Wow.
all coming to get a piece of the action.
Yeah.
These cods were dried, shipped all over Europe.
Okay.
They became an incredibly sought-after commodity.
I bet that led to some intense competition, with all those countries vying for the same fish.
You're telling me, we're talking battles over trade routes.
Wow.
Even piracy.
Piracy over cod. That's wild.
It really highlights how important fish were to these economies.
It's like the Wild West, but on the ocean.
Exactly. So all this competition, this demand for cod, it really set the stage for the need for some kind of regulations.
I can see that. So how did that happen? Like, how did we go from the Wild West of the seas to, you know, actual rules for fishing?
Well, as fishing intensified, especially with the Industrial Revolution and all these new technologies,
yeah,
conflict started to arise over fishing territories.
Like, who could fish where?
Exactly. That old idea of freedom of the seas where the ocean was open to...
Yeah.
It just wasn't working anymore.
So what changed?
One dramatic example is the Cod Wars.
The Cod Wars. What, they went to war over cod?
Iceland did multiple times. They really fought hard to protect their cod stocks from international fleets.
Wow. I never knew fish could be such a source of conflict.
Yeah, it really shows how important these resources are. And these conflicts, along with the growing concern about overfishing,
yeah,
they eventually led to the development of the law of the sea and those EEZs we talked about earlier.
Okay, that makes sense. So we've got a handle on the human side of things. What about those cool pinnipeds?
Let's get into it.
They just seem so perfectly adapted to life in the water.
Yeah. Their evolution is a fascinating story.
So how do scientists even figure out where these creatures came from?
They use fossils, molecular data.
Okay.
And a technique called cladistics.
Cladistics.
Yeah, it's basically looking at shared characteristics to figure out how different species are related.
Cool. So, like, where does this evolutionary journey even begin? Who are the ancestors of these amazing pinnipeds?
Well, one of the earliest known pinnipeds might be Enalliarctos mielsi.
Enalliarctos mielsi.
Yeah, try saying that five times fast.
Uh-huh. I'll pass. So who is this Enalliarctos character?
Well, we've found fossils of this creature dating back 23 million years in California.
Wow, 23 million years. That's ancient.
Yeah, and it was about the size of a fur seal.
Okay.
And its body structure suggests it was a strong swimmer, using both its hind limbs and forelimbs for propulsion.
So it was already starting to transition to a more aquatic lifestyle.
Definitely. And what's really interesting is that Enalliarctos has features of both land and the marine mammals.
Like a mix of both.
Yeah. It had a flexible spine, kind of like modern seals use for swimming.
Okay.
But it also had features suggesting it was pretty agile on land.
So it was spending time both in AD, out of the water.
Exactly. A true transitional creature.
It's mind-blowing to think about these creatures, you know, slowly evolving over millions of years.
Yeah.
Gradually adapting to a life in the ocean.
Yeah. And the story gets even more intriguing when we consider Puhila Darwini.
Ooh, another character in our pinniped saga. Tell me more.
All right. This creature, it was otter-sized, discovered in the Canadian Arctic.
Okay.
It dates back about 20, 24 million years, overlapping with Enalliarctos.
Interesting.
Puhila had webbed feet and a skeleton that shares some similarities with pinnipeds.
So, like, was Puhila a direct ancestor of modern pinnipeds?
That's a great question, and that's where the debate lies.
Oh.
Some scientists think Puhila was a direct ancestor, pointing to an Arctic origin for pinnipeds.
Okay.
Others argue that Enalliarctos from the North Pacific is the true ancestor.
So two possible origin stories?
Exactly. It's quite the evolutionary puzzle.
This is a great start to our deep dive. I'm really excited to see where this goes.
Me too.
We're uncovering some really fascinating stuff already.
Yeah, definitely.
Can't wait to learn more about these amazing animals and the challenges they face.
Let's do it.
Okay, so we just went on this deep dive into the history of fisheries.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
And we got this glimpse into how these pinnipeds evolved.
Really fascinating stuff.
It really is. Now I want to know more about, like, what challenges these creatures are facing,
yeah,
especially with all the ways humans are impacting the ocean.
Yeah, it's no secret that both fisheries and the pinnipeds,
yeah,
they're dealing with some serious pressure these days.
Okay, so let's break it down. First, the fish you mentioned, overfishing.
Right.
But what are some other threats to fish populations?
Habitat degradation is a huge EE one.
Habitat degradation.
You know, think about coastal development, pollution from all sorts of sources.
Oh, yeah.
And destructive fishing practices like bottom trawling.
Bottom trawling.
It's basically dragging a net across the seafloor.
Yeah.
And it can just destroy essential fish habitats.
So it's not just about taking too many fish out of the water. Yeah. It's about their homes, too.
Exactly. And then, of course, we can't forget about climate change.
Yeah, that's impacting pretty much everything.
Right. We're seeing shifts in ocean temperatures, acidification, even changes to current patterns. And that can disrupt fish migrations.
Oh, well.
Mess with their food sources.
Yeah.
And make it harder for some species to survive.
It's like we're changing their world faster than they can adapt.
Yeah, it's a big problem. And to make things even more complicated.
Oh, I bet.
Many fish species are highly migratory.
So they travel a lot.
They cross international borders.
Oh, wow. So that must make managing them a nightmare.
Yeah, you need international cooperation.
Yeah.
Agreements on catch limits, fishing seasons, all that stuff.
So it's not just one country's problem.
Nope. And unfortunately, illegal and unregulated fishing,
yeah,
that's still a major threat.
Especially where there's not a lot of enforcement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got overfishing, habitat loss, climate change, all impacting fish populations.
What about those pinnipeds? Are they facing similar threats?
They are. Plus some extra challenges, just because of their lifestyles and their role in the ecosystem.
Yeah, they're like top predators, right?
Exactly. And so they're particularly vulnerable to this thing called bioaccumulation.
Bioaccumulation.
It's basically where toxins like mercury and PCBs, they build up in higher concentrations as you go up the food chain.
So the animals at the top, like seals and walruses,
yeah,
they end up with a much higher dose.
Right. And those toxins can really mess them up.
It's crazy how connected everything is.
Yeah. What we put into the environment, it doesn't just disappear.
It can have some pretty serious consequences.
For sure. And pinnipeds also face this other really big threat, entanglement in fishing gear.
Oh, yeah. Those pictures are always heartbreaking.
Yeah. You know, seals are curious, playful creatures. They can easily get tangled in nets, lines, all that stuff.
And then drown or starve.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. Mm. We've already talked about how climate change is impacting fish.
Right.
But it's hitting pinnipeds hard, too.
Oh, I bet.
You know, melting sea ice is shrinking the habitat of ice-dependent seals.
Like those ringed seals and harp seals?
Exactly. It's forcing them to adapt to these new conditions.
Or what? Just disappear?
Yeah, populations could decline if they can't adapt fast enough.
It just seems like one thing after another.
It is. And warmer waters can change the distribution and abundance of their prey, too.
Oh, yeah. So it's like double whammy.
Yeah. Making it harder for them to find food. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It's a pretty bleak picture, but I wouldn't say it's hopeless.
Okay, good. So what can we do about all this?
Well, we've talked about sustainable fishing practices.
Yeah.
And responsible aquaculture. That's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
And we also need to protect and restore critical habitats.
For both fish and pinnipeds.
Right. And specifically for pinnipeds.
Yeah.
We need to minimize pollution, mitigate the impacts of climate change,
yeah,
and really work on preventing entanglements in fishing gear.
All very important. So we need these big, large-scale efforts.
Right.
But what about us as individuals? What can we do in our daily lives?
Being more mindful about the seafood you buy is a big one.
Okay, like checking labels and stuff.
Yeah. Look for labels that indicate sustainable fishing practices or responsible aquaculture.
All right. And what about supporting organizations that are working on these issues?
Definitely. You can donate, volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
That all makes a difference. And just talking to people about these issues.
Yes, yeah, spreading awareness.
Exactly. The more people understand the challenges,
yeah,
the more likely we are to find solutions.
It makes sense. So it's a collective effort, really.
It really is. Everybody needs to be involved, from policymakers to scientists to fishing community.
To everyday people.
Yep. We all have a role to play in ensuring a healthy future for our oceans.
This has been an incredibly insightful conversation.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground.
We have, from ancient fishing techniques to all these conservation efforts.
It's amazing how much goes into it.
Yeah, it really is. Now, I'm curious to delve into some specific examples.
Yeah, let's get more specific.
Of the challenges facing certain fisheries and pinnipeds.
Sounds good to me.
Welcome back to this deep dive, everybody. We've covered so much about fisheries and pinnipeds, from their ancient history to the threats they face today.
And their fascinating evolution. It's amazing how far these creatures have come.
It really is. But now I want to get even more specific. You know, what are the challenges facing specific fisheries and pinnipeds in today's world?
Okay, let's zero in on some examples.
Hmm.
How about we start with a fishery that's close to home for many of us, the salmon fishery here on the Pacific Coast?
Okay, yeah. Pacific salmon, what makes them so vulnerable?
Well, Pacific salmon are what we call anadromous. It
Anadromous.
means they're born in freshwater,
Okay.
they migrate to the ocean to grow and mature, and then they return to freshwater to spawn.
Wow, that's quite a journey.
It is, and that's what makes them so susceptible to habitat disruptions
Yeah.
at like every stage of their lives.
So if something happens to the rivers or the
Or
ocean,
even dams,
yeah, dams.
it can all impact their chances of survival.
So it's not just about overfishing, it's about their whole migration route.
Exactly. Dams can block their migration routes.
Makes sense.
Logging practices can degrade stream habitats.
Oh, yeah.
And then in the ocean, they have to deal with overfishing and competition with other species.
It sounds like a lot to manage.
It is. And then you add climate change on top of all that.
Of course.
Rising water temperatures can stress salmon, making them more susceptible to disease.
Oh.
And it can also impact their ability to find food.
This is really highlighting how interconnected everything is.
Yeah, it's not just one isolated threat.
It's this whole web of factors.
Exactly. And we see similar challenges in other fisheries around the world, too. Take the tuna fishery, for example.
Or tuna. Yeah.
Many tuna species are highly migratory.
Oh, yeah, they travel across like huge stretches of ocean, right?
Exactly. And that makes managing them incredibly difficult.
So, how do you manage a fish that doesn't even stay in one country's waters?
It requires international cooperation,
Okay.
agreements on catch limits,
Uh-huh.
fishing seasons, all of that.
I can imagine that gets pretty complicated.
It does. And unfortunately, illegal and unregulated fishing,
Yeah.
those are still major threats to tuna populations.
Especially in areas where it's hard to enforce the rules.
Exactly. It's an ongoing battle. And of course, we can't forget about the cod fishery in the Atlantic.
The cod fishery, yeah, that's had its share of problems.
It has, and it's still struggling to recover from decades of overfishing.
It really highlights the long-term impacts of, you know, not managing things sustainably.
For sure. Okay, so we've talked about fisheries, but what about those pinnipeds?
Yeah, let's talk about them. You mentioned earlier how they're vulnerable to bioaccumulation of toxins.
Right.
Can you give me like a specific example of how that plays out for certain species?
Well, let's look at harbor seals.
Harbor seals,
They
okay.
live along the coast, feeding on fish and invertebrates in nearshore environments.
Okay.
But because they're so close to areas of human activity, they're more likely to be exposed to pollutants that enter the water.
From things like runoff and industrial waste.
Exactly. And over time, these pollutants can build up in their bodies.
Oh,
And it
no.
can really impact their immune systems,
Wow.
their reproductive health, even their neurological development.
That's just sad. Like, the animals closest to us are often the ones that suffer the most.
It's true. And we see similar concerns with other pinnipeds, too, like Steller sea lions.
Stellar sea lions. Yeah, I've heard their populations have declined in some areas.
They have, and it's a complicated issue.
I bet.
Scientists think it's a combination of things, changes in prey availability,
Okay.
competition with fisheries, disease outbreaks, and yeah, exposure to contaminants.
It's like a perfect storm of threats.
It really is. And then, of course, we have climate change making everything worse.
Yeah. The loss of sea ice, that must be especially tough on those ice-dependent seals.
It is like ring seals. They rely on the ice for everything, breeding, molting, resting.
And as the ice disappears.
They're losing their homes and the resources they need to survive.
Wow. So this deep dive has been, well, it's been a lot.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of heavy stuff.
It's clear that fisheries and pinnipeds are facing some serious challenges.
But it's important to remember that we can make a difference.
Absolutely. Okay, so before we wrap up, let's talk about that. What can we do to help?
Well, as consumers, we can be more mindful about the seafood we buy.
Like checking labels.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Look for labels that indicate sustainable fishing practices
Okay.
or responsible aquaculture.
Hmm.
And reducing our use of single-use plastics. That's a big one.
Yeah, that makes sense. What about supporting organizations that are working on these issues?
Definitely. You can donate to them, volunteer your time.
Okay, cool.
And just talking to people about these issues, spreading awareness.
Yeah, the more people understand, the better.
Exactly. We can advocate for stronger environmental policies.
Yeah.
Support sustainable businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Just educate others about how important ocean health is.
I think this deep dive has really shown that we're all connected to the ocean.
We are.
It doesn't matter if you live near the coast or not.
Yeah.
What happens to the ocean affects all of us.
And we all have a responsibility to take care of it.
Well said. I think this deep dive has been a real journey.
Yeah, we've learned a lot.
We've gone from the ancient history of fishing to the cutting-edge science that's helping us protect our oceans.
And we've seen how resilient these creatures are.
Absolutely. And I think the biggest takeaway for me is that we all have a role to play in protecting our oceans.
I'd agree more.
So to everyone listening, thank you for joining us on this incredible deep dive.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
We've explored some amazing things, but more importantly, we've been reminded that our actions, no matter how small, can make a difference. So keep exploring, keep learning, and keep advocating for a healthier planet. Until next time.